We got our ad commissioner, Dr. Mike Strain, in the house. We take a visit every month or so with getting reports on what's going on in the world of agriculture. But it's really so much more than that because it's the entire world around us. If you eat it, we're talking about it. If we grow it, we're talking about it. And today, where I want to start, Dr. Strain. By the way, welcome back. How are you, sir?
Well, thank you. I am doing
well.
Happy
New Year to you.
Happy New Year. Can you believe it's already January?
You blink your
eyes, and the year goes by.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, not just January, but we're already in the second full week.
Yeah.
Or second week of January. So.
And you were telling me that, you know, your daughter now is going into college, and she was born the year I ran for this office.
Right.
What happened?
I don't know.
You don't know, right?
That was way too fast for me.
I understand.
And you can't get it back.
Yeah, and you blink your eyes, right? You just wait. You blink your eyes, your little girl, 4 years will go by, right? Of course, we're going to work on grad school. I'll talk to her.
You think?
Oh, what? Absolutely. Or something. Professional school, graduate school.
I mean.
Somewhere.
Do I look like I've got, like, am I leaning here? Does it look like there's money in my wallet?
You're overweighted with money on one side. But look, the more you learn, the more you earn. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm the one paying it.
Okay.
She going to learn all day.
Well, I know how you radio titans are.
Oh,
you know?
Good Lord. we got a lot of ground to cover here. Can we start with what's going on nationally right now? The wildfires out in California.
Well, I tell you, I saw that and immediately, you know, deja vu and thinking of the wildfires we had here.
Yeah, just two summers ago.
And if you look several days ago, that fire started off and it was on, you know, 725 acres. Now it's over 27,000 acres. And it's very dry there.
Mm-hmm.
We had very similar conditions, you know, in the summer 2023. And then you had the Santa Ana winds. You've heard about the Santa Ana winds. 90 to 100 mile an hour winds. Now you think about it. The worst I've ever fought were the fires in Grayson and Creston, which were ahead of a tropical storm. We had a drought, and it was ahead of a tropical storm, and they were 25 to 30 mile an hour winds. And that fire would run over our heads at a rate of 4 to 6 miles an hour. So you think about that, and this 100 mile an hour winds, these fires can run overhead in the canopy 10 miles in an hour.
Yes.
Now you think about that. So, in 3 hours, it could be from here to Hammond.
Right.
So, and you cannot, there's no way to get in and fight those fires and quote, the wind lays down. You can't fly aircraft. And it's when you're fighting, you say, well, you know, just go in there and fight the fires. Well, it gets in the canopies and then it gets into those buildings, and those buildings, they catch on fire, but they also just spontaneously almost incinerate. You know, in Creston, we lost 10 houses in under 10 minutes. And they just literally incinerated because it creates a firestorm. Fire creates its own weather. It creates its own atmosphere. And it gets so hot, so intense, things, you know, you think, well, you know, an ember had to get in those houses. Not when they're all burning. They just, it gets so hot, they just spontaneously start burning.
Okay. Well, let's walk down that.
Then you got the embers. That's another.
So
that's,
the embers flying creates.
Yes.
If it incinerates that quickly, isn't it burning through its own fuel that quickly?
Oh, it's so hot. It's just,
yeah.
If you ever see a firestorm, it's just so hot, so intense, you know, and all that wind, and it will burn through that fuel, you know. So these houses, it's not like they will, a typical house fire could last for quite a while,
mm-hmm.
but there's so much heat that they burn extraordinarily fast. And, you know, and putting water on the house before it gets there is not going to stop it. Now, there are things that we tell people to do to protect your home from wildfire. For instance, you live in a rural countryside, right? If you have an elevated house, you need to have some type of screen or something there and under the eaves, or where an ember can't get under the house, or the ember can't get into the attic, or can't go under an eave. An open garage, open garage with all this stuff and you know, fuel tanks in there and that sort of thing. No, you need a garage door, because these embers, we had embers from the fires that we had from the Tiger Island fire that would started fires in Texas 20 miles away. Now you think about this. Those embers go up from the intense heat, they go and they settle. And what happened in Los Angeles and Palisades and through there, these embers, they leapfrog. They'll leapfrog with the wind ahead of you. And so as you're fighting here, now you're fighting behind you and in front of you at the same time. oftentimes 1 mile, 5 miles, 8 miles, you know, just depending on how it's going. And then you can get the firenados, tornadoes of fire, right? And we had some of those in Sabine Parish. And when you see a firenado, once you see it, you'll never forget it. And it's rolling and it's lighting everything. And so, you know, what we're doing here, you know, is that we have increased our training. Mm-hmm. We have fire academies. We call them heavy steel academies, where additional people, they train, they retrain, new people are trained in our agency, and we offer it also to other agencies to work with us, where we take our dozers, our, you know, our suppression equipment and everything, and we have an actual site there at one of our large offices in Woodworth, Louisiana, where we set up the training academy, where they take these dozers and they go out and they quote, fight fires, but also they train on what happens if you stick that dozer on an object, your high center of dozer. How do you get it off? How do you go down the side of a slope? What happens if you start sliding? You bog that dozer down. You get it stuck in the mud, right? Mm-hmm. And you're in it. Now what do? You know, and we train and retrain and retrain, and we train on coordination. And the other thing we've done is we've established a central dispatch system that is there here on Florida Boulevard, adjacent to our Emergency Operations Center, EOP, because I'm part of GOSEP, Governor's Office, Homeland Security, and Emergency Preparedness. So we deal with fuel, you know, logistics, fire, and every unit, every dozer, every transport, every pickup truck, everything is GPS. And we've got screens where it's live, so we know where everybody is, where all of our equipment is, so we can more efficiently dispatch. And now we're working, the legislature was very good in helping us to buy some new equipment. You know, so we're up, we've already bought about 30 new dozers coming into play, probably half that many transports. And so we are, the dozers that we used a year and a half ago, a lot of those are just simply worn out. And
yeah.
So we're redoing the undercarriages on them, mm-hmm. but we're also setting up a system to where we can have more equipment in the hot zones. DeRidder is a hot zone. You know, and so that I can move personnel much faster than I can move equipment across the state.
Mm-hmm.
And we can leapfrog personnel and bring additional personnel that we're now training to put more manpower on the dozers. Because I can tell you, on one Sunday during the height of the fire, you know, and the battle at Tiger Island, Highway 113, you know, all these different, you know, fires that we were fighting, we got down to no more equipment. We had every piece of equipment committed. We had a thunderstorm system go through, and in 10 minutes I had 8 new fires, 8 in 10 minutes from lightning strike.
Unreal.
And we had one that was in Calcasieu Parish between a subdivision and a refinery.
Oh.
And we had, and so what are we going to send? Everything is committed, so we located, we have an industrial dozer,
yep.
that is at our Lackesson facility. We sent it down there until we could leapfrog, because that's what our firefighters do. They get this under control,
mm-hmm.
right? There's controlment and containment. Control means you've got it plowed and you're holding it. Containment's when there's no more fire. Containment could take a month. And we leapfrog them so that we can better, quote, leapfrog. So
control essentially is
managing it.
Yeah, well,
we're keeping it from
eliminating its fuel source. Or
you're stopping it from moving to a new fuel source.
Okay,
right?
There you go.
That's the whole thing.
And that is simultaneously proactive and reactive, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
We got 2 minutes till break, so I want to ask you this before we get to break. When it comes to California versus Louisiana, how good are we with the proactive stuff?
We're very good. Prescribed burning. We actively manage our forest, and one of the issues that we had in the summer of 2023 is some of those forests had not been managed,
mm-hmm.
properly, and out of state and out of country landowners say, look, you need to manage your forest. You need to come in and do your prescribed burning. You need to clean up, you know, your right of ways. You need to clean up and, you know, all the fire breaks, do everything that you need to do, you know, versus waiting till there's a disaster and us have to come in, and now you've lost everything. And so we are very proactive with that. And also we have signed a memorandum of understanding with the National Forest Service. So like the Castache, our goal is to prescribe burn at least 10% of the national forest in Louisiana per year.
Oh,
so
wow.
Active management. And we work together, active management, on the state forest, the national forest, and working with private landowners.
Now, do you know offhand if California does or does not do the same prescribed burning we do?
We're trying to get them in California, U.S. Forest Service, to manage their forest. And that is something that's got to be done. It's got to be done. But, people think that, managed prescribed burning gets rid of the underbrush, gets rid of the unnecessary fuel, and it's healthy for the environment, because you get very good regrowth. And so they're not, they really aren't doing what they need to do. Now, where these fires started was in a narrow strip between the ocean, right, and the ridge in Malibu where all these homes are.
Right.
So they would not have done prescribed burning there. But you've got to get rid of the deadwood. You've got to, and you really need to go ahead and trim up the grass and do all the things you can do proactively versus reactively.
And Commissioner Dr. Mike Strainin with us. During the break, Dr. Strainin was sharing the story of saving the town of Maryville.
Yes. And it was, I can tell you, when the first call came in on around the 22nd of August, and my fire chief said, what are your orders? My orders are whatever it takes. We're not going to lose the town of Maryville. Whatever it takes.
I just
bring all assets to bear from anywhere, anything that we can do, but we're not going to lose the town. That order was reiterated twice a day, every day. And that fire got within 3,500 yards of the town of Maryville.
Within 3,500 yards.
3,500 yards of the town. And you can start seeing the embers come in. And, of course, they've got their local volunteer fire departments and any assistance wetting the houses down. We got our dozers trying to push it back. But we have a 35,000-acre fire, a firestorm. Right. And you see those flames go several hundred feet in the air, right, because it's burning vaporized pine tar and sap, vaporized, right? You think about it, turpentine vaporized, and you got these massive flames, this massive heat. And you're pushing back, and I can tell you, I was just can't understand how you feel when help shows up. When the National Guard came, and then of course, we started using the helicopter drops, and we're putting water on the tops of the trees, trying to knock that fire back down to the ground and push it back away from the town.
Mm-hmm.
So, in this battle for Maryville, we had it under control. Our team got it under control, working, our team with the National Guard, by about the sixth day of the battle. And then what happens, once you get it under control, when the National Forest Service and the different strike teams, of which we are part of the compact, when the red team got there, we handed that one off to the red team. And then we redeployed, because then we started fighting, simultaneously, the big fires at Highway 113, 7,000 acres, which were arson proven. And a number of these other battles that were simultaneously. And so, at the end of the day, we fought fires on over 65,000 acres in a 5-week period. And, in some days, you'd have 10 or 20 fires simultaneous. And then we started having fires across the whole state. But, you're talking about, you can't lose a town. You don't want to lose any homes.
Right.
But you can't lose a town. And so you got Governor John Bell. He said, look, let's go. So and I came back to Baton Rouge, and then we took the Blackhawks and the state police helicopters, and we flew in to a little command center just outside the town of Maryville. And I knew that the situation was dire. We're flying, and I'm sitting next to the governor. He's leaning out the window with a rosary praying. Now, this is a West Point graduate, and an Army Ranger,
right?
And when you say, how bad it is, but you could see that fire line, stretched for like 25 miles. You're looking at that 25-mile fire line that you're battling. And then we landed there, and we went in, and of course, you have the townsfolk there, and they were just, the townsfolk, they're about to lose their homes, but what are they doing?
What?
They're cooking for us. They got food there.
Of course.
You've got your local fire departments. You got your volunteer fire departments. You got state police, National Guard. And we're bringing in all the help we can. And everybody's looking at us, all right, so what are you going to do? And like the governor said, and we said, we're not going to lose. We're not going to give up. We're not going to stop. And so as we started the discussion and the prayer meeting, and there the priest came out, and when you pray in the face of great adversity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone unified. And I think that's the most powerful Lord's Prayer I've ever prayed. You know, and but it gives you strength and resilience, and we continue that fight. For over 6 weeks, we fought those battles. And the expenditures not covered by our budget were in excess of $40 million. $40 million. And if you look at California, their annual budget is over $1 billion.
Yeah.
For FireCal. And whatever it takes, right? Because you can't give up. And so
no,
somebody said, well, how are you going to pay for this? I said, one thing the commissioner's got, good credit.
And you mean you're talking about the power of prayer at a time like that. And yesterday was the feast day of Our Lady of Prom Sucker.
Mm-hmm.
So could not be more
patron
apropos.
Saint, yes.
Yep. You know, probably should have hit up the nuns at the Ursuline Convent, got them in, because they've done it before, right?
They've done it before.
This needs to be a movie, man. I got to put you in touch with Patrick Mulhern and Celtic and whatnot, man.
That
needs to be on screen.
You know, it's one
with the film tax credits and everything.
My state forester Wade Dubé, he and I, and we're in a battle for the town of Creston, and the fire is raging. We're trying to save a 100-year-old church in the cemetery, and we're plowing fire lines. And Wade said, "It's time to go." I said, "How fast we got to run?" He said, "Well, unfortunately, we both got to run together." And so the fire had overtaken us, and it was one way out. So that dozer's cutting us a path, and we are going. And literally, he's got his hand on my jacket, and we're rolling. And I said, you know, and both of us, how you say, we're not slim, right? You know, and after about, you know, about the first mile, you know, but you can't stop, you know. Mm. But we did save the church and the cemetery there in Creston.
Unreal.
You know, but again, tropical force winds,
yeah,
they do. That's a wicked experience. When you hear this fire coming, and it was loud there, but it was much louder at Tiger Island. It literally sounds like Godzilla coming through the timber. It's, you know, you just hear this cracking, this exploding, and then the wind sucks through you. It pulls air into the fire, if that makes sense. It's so hot, it creates its own atmosphere and pulls wind into the fire. And then you see these flames literally hundreds of feet in the air, you know. And I have photographs of the tornadoes of fire, and we have videos showing how this fire, these flames, and it's not the direct flame from the trees, it's all the chemicals in the atmosphere just burning,
right?
And it gets so hot, and you say, well, how does it catch a fire across a double-laned highway? It's so hot, it just ignites, you know, and so you just have to continue to fight until you get it suppressed.
We got Commissioner Dr. Mike Strain in with us, and the comparisons between what's going on in the Los Angeles area versus what happened in our own backyard 2 years ago. It's going to be a compelling story forever. We got a lot of topics to cover, though.
Let's go.
Okay. LSU men's basketball. You're already confused. LSU men's basketball. I'm watching the other night, all right? And it's on the SEC Network.
Uh-huh.
Well, I was producing the game for LSU Sports Radio. But on the monitor, we had the SEC Network, and about midway through the second half, they go to break, and you see the commercial for the advancements being done at LSU in the world of rice.
Oh, they're incredible. It's unbelievable. We have probably the preeminent rice research station in the world, the H. Rouse Caffey Rice Research Station in Crowley, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the advancements in production, advancements in yield, the advancements in quality, and to continue science and research supported by the farmers,
mm-hmm,
with a voluntary checkoff, voluntary on research and promotion. And also, it is supported by your tax dollars as well. But the farmers kick in money, you know, so much per hundredweight that has been there to help fund that research institution. Same way with sweet potatoes, same way with most crops.
Mm-hmm.
The farmers voluntarily, because it's a voluntary checkoff, help promote the research. But we have the finest research stations in the world, and that rice is right there at the top of the world.
So when it comes to it, we produce, it's just greater yield, right? I mean, we're talking.
Oh, No. It's far more than greater yield. It's resistance to pests. You know, it's something that can stand whatever the new fungus or bugs of the day are, how we can produce more with and better utilize the soil that's there, new varieties, and varieties that will grow in different environments. So we have a sister research station they work with. It's actually in Puerto Rico. And we're talking about trying to work to establish additional research centers, one, for instance, in Cuba.
Yeah.
And so LSU not only develops rice varieties for use in Louisiana, but for use worldwide. Their Clearfield rice, think about this, one of the greatest discoveries ever made in rice. And those royalties now, and over the years, they've received over $100 million in royalties on that one breed alone, helps fund that research station for further advancements. And so when you look at what they're doing, you know, and all the different types of low glycemic rice. So you have Parrish rice, which is in concert with LSU. They have a rice that is a low glycemic, high protein rice. What a wonderful thing, you know. And then absolutely called Parrish rice. It's delicious. And then you have other rice varieties that they help develop that are, you may want a nuttier flavor. You like the purple rice, right? And so again, more protein. Absolutely. We have purple rice, we have gold rice. Absolutely. But if you look at what the goal is, rice is the number one starch consumed worldwide.
Right.
Number one starch. And currently, this year, the world will produce and consume rice equally, right? Previous years, they've been consuming more than we're producing. Our goal is that we've got to increase productivity for here and for the world. And if you look at Louisiana, you know, we are a rice powerhouse. We're third in the United States in production of rice. And we are working now. We are exporting rice to Cuba. Mm-hmm. We have the potential to export up to 500,000 metric tons a year, a third of our crop, mm-hmm. you know, to Cuba. But we're going to Cuba, Guatemala. We're going to Mexico. We're going to all parts of the world. It's a big part of our economy. But the other thing about when you're talking about rice research station,
yeah,
rice, mm-hmm. two cuttings.
Yeah.
What's and next? Crawfish.
We got just a couple minutes left. Crawfish season is upon us.
It is, and I am so excited. I talked to my farmers. We've had good weather, good rice crops.
Uh-huh.
We've got a lot of vegetative mass out there. We got plenty of water, and they're already fishing. Now, for this week, for about 7 to 8 days, because it's cold, crawfish don't like to come out and feed or grow during the cold.
Right.
When this is over, though, we are going to have an excellent season. We had some early crawfish. Mm-hmm. We're expecting just a strong rebound in the crawfish industry. Because, again, over 300,000 acres of farm crawfish, plus what's going on in the basin. Mm-hmm. So we're excited. We're expecting an absolutely great crawfish season.
Now, that being said, though, if I'm remembering our conversations right, there is still a little bit of hesitation. It's not going to be like record break. It's going to be good, but we do still have to worry about continuing to reseed.
Well, that's correct because, you know, we lost 100,000 acres.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. An average cost to reseed those acres is about $500 per acre. And that's a pretty big investment.
Yeah.
You know, so if you have 1,000 acres, that's 500,000. You know, if you look at the amount of money it takes to do that. So then you got to have the crawfish to reseed them.
Right.
So they're trying, and it will take probably, you know, a couple of years to get back up to the amount of production we had before. But I can tell you with the value, right, mm-hmm. the farmers are getting, it's a full court press. To get back into the crawfish business. And so that is exciting. But some of the areas, it's going to take a little time.
Well, they are here right now, so we're on our way to a good season.